Mr. Varun had directed them to a private airfield outside the city limits. Anya kept a careful eye on the rearview mirror and side mirrors to ensure they weren't being followed. But followed by who, exactly? Canadian intelligence? Garin's people? Someone she didn't even know? She hadn't seen anything suspicious, but that didn't mean they weren't being followed. The charming Mr. Varun had easily located her twice. The car pulled up next to a shiny new Gulfstream G550.
It can carry up to 19 passengers. If anyone cares to rest during the flight, it also has 8 seats that convert into quite comfortable beds.
Varun walked up the steps ahead of them.
Please, come in. Sit wherever you like.
Anya, Ben, and Antoinette quickly made their way to the seats, which were overstuffed recliners covered in buttery leather.
I am afraid that on such short notice, I was able to hire only a pilot, so we have no flight crew. We will have to see to ourselves. However, we are fully stocked with water and soft drinks, fresh coffee, and a selection of vegetarian meals, which can be heated in the microwave oven.
Varun turned and entered the cockpit, no doubt relaying final instructions to the pilot. He swiveled the chair around so they could speak face to face.
Well, do we trust him?
At this point, I'm afraid we have no choice. To be honest, I probably trust him a lot more than Sleeping Beauty back there.
Antoinette Leroy had reclined her seat and seemed to be dead to the world 2 rows behind Anya. Her mouth hung slightly open, but she had not yet begun to snore. She had thankfully had the presence of mind to put on her seatbelt, which made Anya wonder if she was faking unconsciousness.
I have to ask, though, why are we doing this? Diana is safe, and the Canadian government was never actually interested in the jewels. We could just give Varun what we know. He and Antoinette could go to Martinique and find their treasure, and you and I could stay here. You could teach me how to snowshoe.
Why do you assume that I know how to snowshoe?
You don't.
Of course I do, but I refuse to be stereotyped by someone I... like.
We'll table that awkward pause for the moment, but I'm serious. There's no reason either of us should put our lives on the line for these 2 Bond villains.
What happened to Indiana Jones?
We're going to the Caribbean. All the best Bond films happen in the Caribbean.
Goldfinger?
Touché, monsieur. But you see my point, right?
They felt subtle bumps through their feet as the jet began to taxi towards the runway.
Well, it seems to be too late to change our minds now. But to answer your question, how could you bear to let anyone else find the jewels after everything we've been through?
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Professor McKittrick, I am afraid I must ask you to turn your seat around for takeoff. You may continue your conversation with Miss Creed once we have reached altitude. The pilot informs me he can have us to Fort de France in Martinique in as little as 4 hours, so everyone should try to sleep. It will be morning when we arrive.
Brooke and Wilson had been waiting for an hour to hear from their client. They were parked 3 blocks from the warehouse. Because of the isolated location, it had taken that long for someone to call in the fire.
Hello?
Listen carefully. I've tracked them to an airstrip outside the city. The only flight that has left in the last hour is headed for Martinique.
In the Caribbean?
Don't interrupt. I'm sending you the address to the airfield. I have arranged a jet for you and Mr. Wilson, but obviously you will not be able to overtake them. I am also dispatching a team from Miami. They should arrive at the same time you do. You are to determine where the treasure is in Martinique and retrieve it.
Who's in charge when we get there?
You are. Despite your repeated failure to carry out the mission, you will retain command. But this is your final chance. Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Well?
Martinique. If you want out, now's the time.
Will I get paid now?
No.
Then I'm glad I packed my swim trunks, because I ain't going anywhere but Martinique.
Despite the comfort of the seats, Anya found it impossible to get any sleep. And staring at the back of Ben's seat only reminded her of the danger he might be in. Ever since she had stumbled into the mystical presence of Joan of Arc's sword, she was constantly pulled into dangerous adventures. She didn't mind so much for herself. She had learned to accept her fate, and even relish it sometimes. But the thought of innocent people being hurt because of her was intolerable, especially ones as likable as Ben. She wondered if Garin was going to show up at their destination. People tended to get hurt when they got in his way, which made her worry about Ben even more. And speaking of Garin, where was Rue? The love-hate relationship between the two men had endured for 500 years. This adventure was the sort Rue would never have missed out on. French crown jewels, mementos of Joan of Arc, the girl who had been martyred on his watch all those years ago, and a chance to screw with Garin. How was he missing this?
Coffee.
She reached across to undo her seatbelt and glimpsed the corner of a piece of paper in her inside jacket pocket.
What the?
It was the note that she had found with the box in the alcove under Joan's statue. She mentally berated herself for forgetting about it, then considered waking Ben up. Instead, she eased it out of her pocket and turned it over. The brittle wax seal had cracked.
Ben's right. Some professional you are.
Anya turned on the overhead light and gently opened the letter. The ink had faded, but the spidery script was readable.
Oh my God.
Anya closed the letter and leaned her head back for a moment. She hadn't read much before deciding that going further would almost be an invasion of privacy. Someone else needed to see this letter much more than she did. She slipped the letter back into her jacket, got up, and headed for the coffee pot.
Can't sleep.
Antoinette, you're...
Sober? I believe so, unfortunately.
I was going to say awake.
I'm not sure how long I'll be able to keep this up, but I don't want to waste the opportunity. I need to thank you and apologize.
You mean for the kidnapping and blackmail?
I did not think you would cooperate willingly. I was desperate.
There's a very good chance I would have said yes if you'd just asked. I have to admit, I think I have an addiction myself. I have a problem saying no to adventure.
I should have trusted him.
Who?
Never mind. I'm sorry I kidnapped your young friend and that I didn't simply ask. And thank you for coming with me to see this through to the end.
You aren't upset that I've already given away part of your grand-mère's treasure?
Of course not. It was never about the treasure, it was about my family. About understanding where my mother and her mother and so on came from. I knew this journey wouldn't be easy. You spoke the truth in the car the last time we were together. It's a story I've carried with me my whole life. Finding out that story is true is all the treasure I ever wanted.
Funny you should mention that.
Anya took the letter out of her pocket.
When we were in the church, along with the other items, I found this. I'm sorry I broke the seal on it, but after the first line or two, I stopped. I don't think I'm the intended reader. You, however...
Antoinette took the paper gingerly in her hands and turned away from Anya.
To the future. Know that I made a harrowing journey across the sea so that I may protect these precious jewels and symbols of our noble crown which you now seek. A mission I took with great honor. My compatriots in the New World aided in my efforts to keep these precious items safe for many years. But an unforeseen failure on my part caused me to make an impossible choice. The safety of the jewels or my very soul. I stood tall in the face of revolution, stormy seas, and the dangers of an unmarried woman traveling alone. But I could not stand up to threats that plagued me in my own home. For the sake of my promise, these treasures of my king and queen have been taken to a place of safety. If you have made it this far, it is my sincere hope that you will go just a bit farther. I have done this for my children, that they may grow and flourish in this beautiful place and forget the horrors of their father's tyranny. I wish you a safe journey. You take my wishes, hopes, and prayers with you. Agnes.
Anya said nothing as Antoinette sat, holding the letter close, clearly trying not to cry. She was grateful she had been able to play a part in giving someone closure, reuniting them in a way with a precious person from the past. They remained silent for the rest of the flight, as the sun slowly appeared on the left side of the plane, and with it, the promise of new dangers and the end of a long journey. They had touched down in Fort-de-France, the capital of Martinique, and were met by three impeccably dressed men in black suits. They could have been brothers to Varun. The men had provided two luxury SUVs to take all of them to Chateau Dubuc. The chateau was on a peninsula about an hour northeast of the capital, on the other side of the island, in an area that was wild enough to be a nature preserve. As they drove, Anya reviewed a background file on Martinique and the chateau, which the ever-industrious Diana had attached to an email. Most of the information concerned Louis-François Dubuc. His family had ties to the French crown for generations. Louis XIV was his grandfather's godfather, and he had served in the French army as a young man. During the Revolution, he traveled to Paris to ensure the rights of the islanders in the new order, but it was clear from his next move that he was not a friend to the new French Republic. He went to the British and arranged their protection of Martinique until the restoration of the French royal family, exactly the kind of royalist Agnes would have needed to protect the jewels from populist uprising.
Did you know that after the Seven Years' War, Britain gave France the choice of retaining either Canada or Martinique?
Ben and Anya rode in the lead SUV for most of the ride in respectful silence. Their tour guides hadn't said a word since they had entered the vehicle. She could only imagine what the mysterious Mr. Varun and duplicitous Madame Leroy were talking about in the rear vehicle.
I read the same file. They chose Martinique as a lucrative source of sugar.
Yeah, and they wrote off New France as unproductive. What a load of bull.
Your loyalty to your homeland is admirable.
Well, I bet the French were kicking themselves when Canada was providing most of the beaver pelts for beaver hats. I bet the beavers were kicking themselves too.
Poor beavers. I'm glad to see them coming back.
Oh, so am I, believe me. Anyway, Canada no longer needs the fur trade to put it on the map. We have other wonders that declare our greatness to the world.
Such as?
Ice hockey and poutine.
Ben, thank you.
Thank me? Thank you. This is the greatest adventure of my life. I guess to you, it's just part of the job, chasing history's monsters and all that.
Well, it is part of my job, but it's always an adventure, too.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
I'm not patronizing you, Ben, I swear. And whatever happens, I'm glad to have met you.
You make it sound like we're breaking up. I didn't even know we were dating.
But I'm bump.
I know. Sorry, it's hard for me to have a serious conversation when I'm this amped up. But I'm glad we met, too. Also, one of those is right.
Brooke's jet touched down at a small, isolated landing strip surrounded by scrubby trees and bushes, where it was met by four tall men, once again the boys' club, in black tactical gear. As she and Wilson deplaned, the tallest, broadest, and meanest guy walked up to meet them.
Miss Sanders, Mr. Wilson, the objectives arrived an hour ago. They were met by four men in two SUVs. One of their drivers was heard to ask for directions to the Chateau de Buc. It's a tourist attraction about an hour from here.
Sounds good. What do I call you?
Jones.
Ah, lots of Joneses in this line of work.
Yes, ma'am.
Everybody listen up. Don't underestimate these people, especially the younger of the two women, Anya Creed. Watch out for booby traps. Now move out. I'm up front.
They had been at the chateau for a half hour. It was easy to find the house mentioned in the letter. It was a ruin now, but still impressive. The foundations of various outbuildings and warehouses were easily identified in the open, grassy space. The only challenge was not attracting the attention of dozens of tourists who wandered the site during the height of the winter season.
Over here! I found it!
Anya, Antoinette, and Varun casually walked over to the well where Ben stood, looking a little guilty, after drawing attention to himself by calling to his teammates.
Congratulations! Now everyone here thinks you're a tour guide!
Sorry.
But I found it. Anya, where's the rock?
Anya unzipped her backpack and brought out the chunk of milky quartz. She looked at the well, constructed of rough blocks of coral limestone, but at the very bottom was a hunk of quartz that stuck out like a sore thumb.
That's it.
Oh, man.
Varun took a walkie-talkie from his pocket.
Report.
We have six combatants in the parking lot. They have already taken out Dirul and Raj. We are pinned down.
Well, we are on our own. I am not armed. Are any of you?
Are you mad? Of course I'm armed.
Antoinette produced a Glock from her handbag.
Miss Creed?
Ben, start digging. Mr. Varun, help him. Antoinette, cover them. I'll see what I can do.
But you have no weapon.
Anya took off towards the gunfire. Things had gone south as soon as Brooke and her team arrived. Four men dressed like a SEAL team pulling into a tourist attraction might not have been the smartest of moves. Having exited the SUVs, they were quickly spotted by four of those Indian private security types in black suits from the mall debacle. Mr. Jones had signaled his men to spread out. After initially taking down two of the black suits, Brooke's crew had been pinned down. In the meantime, panicked tourists tried to find cover in their vehicles. Then a few of them tried to leave, and the situation was further complicated by an impromptu demolition derby. Brooke and Wilson had decided to sit out the gunfight and were crouched behind a white tour bus. Not in Martinique for an hour, and already her new team was in a fight for their lives and had caused a minor international incident. That was one more of theirs down. One to go. Anya had quickly made her way to the parking lot. She could spot the firing positions of four gunmen. The last of Varun's men was pinned down in the information kiosk, and while it was a well-protected position, he wouldn't hold out against the firepower of the mercenaries.
Damn it, Garin!
It was his standard operating procedure to come in with guns blazing and not care who was caught in the crossfire. If she thought it would make a difference, she would have handed the treasure over. This situation could end only one of two ways. Anya knew her preference. The mercenaries dead and her friends safe. She reached into the otherwhere. Clutching the pommel of the plain, brutal blade, she made her way to the first of the mercenaries.
How long do you think this is gonna last?
Until one or both of them runs out of ammo or dies?
What was that?
The black suit in the information booth popped out and aimed at the merc to their right.
What the hell?
Anya stood over the body of the second mercenary, two to go. She made her way around a white tour bus. A couple of non-combatants, a man and a woman, were crouched down, waiting out the gun battle. Anya took cover behind a car and zeroed in on the third shooter. There. On the other side of the entrance road to the site was a steep hillside dense with vegetation. One of the mercs was creeping higher, probably trying to gain a vantage point where he could pick off Varun's man in the information kiosk. Staying low, Anya sprinted to the opposite side of the gravel road and crouched in the shallow drainage ditch on the shoulder. She wouldn't be able to sneak up behind him through the dense growth, so she waited until he stopped, half stood, and raised his weapon. Anya stood, holding the sword in both hands, and cocked her arms back over her head. The sword had neatly sliced through the shooter's head and returned to the otherwhere, where it would wait until Anya needed it again.
Three down.
She started working her way across the parking lot to where the last merc was hiding.
Did you see that?
Creed's out there with some kind of medieval pig sticker. Well, let's get out of here.
No. She's going after the guns. She's never seen either of us before. We're going to sneak into the site and see if we can get the drop on her friends.
Are you crazy? No payday is worth getting skewered like a kebab. You're on your own.
Brooke took off like a bolt across the lot, ducking behind cars, sneaking around the gunman at the information desk, who was now in a one-on-one gunfight with Mr. Jones, who was firing from behind a stone wall to her left. She was through the gate and running full out on the path to the chateau.
Please hurry, Professor!
Got it!
All attention was now on the professor as he worked the brick-sized quartz rock from its place in the stone well.
So?
Ben reached into the space and found what felt like a burlap sack. He pulled, but the sack had been wedged in tight. He worked the burlap from side to side as he pulled, hoping it wouldn't tear, hoping the artifacts inside weren't being damaged. With bullets flying not far away, there wasn't time for proper procedure. Ben hefted the bag a few times. It didn't seem full enough to hold the crown jewels.
What are you waiting for? Open it!
I'll take that, Professor.
Anya approached the last merc from behind, moving low and slow. He was too intent on his target to watch his six, although he should have known that he was a target too.
Ah, damn it.
Anya paused behind a scrubby bush only 15 feet away as the big, sweating merc ejected his spent clip and fumbled in his vest for a fresh one. He looked frazzled. Fully reloaded, he rose cautiously to look for a target. So did Anya. He started to turn, but Anya cut his hamstrings. He tried to bring his weapon to bear. Anya kicked it out of his hand. He looked at the sword, then up at Anya, eyes wide.
No!
Yes.
Anya scanned the parking lot and was glad to see no casualties in view. A few people cautiously sat up in parked cars. She was sure that emergency calls had been made, but Chateau Dubuc was so isolated, it would probably be several more minutes before first responders arrived. Just the same, she didn't need to be identified by any witnesses. Bending low, she ran out from behind the stone wall and crept quickly towards the kiosk, using the line of parked cars as cover. When she reached it, she slipped to the side of the structure and knocked softly on the wall.
This is Anya Creed. Are you hurt?
No. What happened to the shooters?
They're gone. That's all you need to know. Come on out.
No! Her heart sank even as she took off running up the path from the parking lot. Those shots had come from the chateau. Before Leroy could bring her gun up to fire, the strange woman had fired three shots into her chest.
Damn it!
Ben dropped to his knees next to her and helped her raise her head. Mr. Varun was removing his shirt to serve as a bandage, but her face had already turned ashen, and blood pulsed from three closely grouped holes in her chest. Brooke noticed that the gunfire from the parking lot had stopped. She had no doubt that Anya had taken out Mr. Jones and was on her way back here. She snatched up the burlap sack and started running for the cover of the surrounding forest. Anya came running over a slight rise just as Brooke disappeared from sight.
What the hell happened?
A tall blonde woman with a pistol approached us and demanded the treasure. Madame Leroy attempted to stop her.
Anya!
Hold on, Antoinette. We're gonna get you out of here.
Oh, please, I know death when I see it. So do you.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. The treasure was real and we found it.
Yes, we did.
Can you do something for me?
Of course. Anything.
Go get it back and kill that bitch!
Ben gently lowered Antoinette's head to the ground.
Oh, God.
Anya rose to her feet.
Well, you heard the lady. Where did the bitch go?
Miss Creed, while I respect your desire to avenge Madame Leroy, there is no need to retrieve the treasure. That woman does not have it.
What? What do you mean?
Mr. Varun means that he had people on the ground well ahead of us. It would have been simple for them to slip in here while we were still in flight and take the treasure.
She is correct. I am sorry, Professor, but I could not take the chance that the stone would not be returned to where it belongs. It was merely a matter of calling the right people in Martinique and having the treasure retrieved.
Anya looked at the rapidly approaching helicopter.
I think we'd better run ourselves.
No, don't worry. That's one of mine. Why don't we continue this conversation in a safer, more comfortable location? I assure you, everything will be explained.
What about Antoinette? She just died for nothing. Do you have an explanation for that, Mr. Varun?
Anya stared at Varun as the helicopter touched down.
I have many resources, as you know, Miss Creed, yet I am unable to see into the future. I deeply regret what happened to Madame Leroy. Please believe that if I could have prevented her death, I would have. But now we need to leave this place before the authorities arrive and arrest us. We will take her with us, I assure you.
The last remaining survivor from the gun battle came walking over the hill, and Varun ran to meet him as Anya looked at Ben. He looked back, his eyes hollow with shock and loss. She felt for him. This was probably his first experience with sudden, violent death. Anya had seen it many times, but she never got used to it. She hoped she never would. Brooke couldn't believe she had done it. After all she had been through, she was due for a win, although she hadn't quite won yet. She still had to get out of here before the two archaeologists and their Indian goon squad caught up with her. Suddenly, the trees opened up and she saw the main road. A black van was approaching from the direction of the house. She stepped out onto the road and aimed her pistol. Wilson frowned at her from behind the wheel of the van.
What the hell?
I got it. This is it.
So, let's roll. Seatbelt, please.
Oh, for the love of...
Brooke dropped the treasure bag on the floor of the van, then looked over her shoulder to locate the seatbelt. Wilson put the pistol on the dashboard, put the transmission in park, and leaned across the body.
Sorry, boss lady, but I owe serious money to some serious people. I need that treasure more than some guy on the telephone.
At the Hotel Simon in Fort-de-France, Mr. Varun led the way into the largest suite available. Anya and Ben crossed the expansive living room and flopped in exhaustion on the white plush sofa. Ben immediately laid his head back and closed his eyes. He still looked pale. Mr. Varun frowned in concern.
You have both been through a great deal. May I offer you food? Tea? I even have a doctor on call.
Ben suddenly raised his head and sat forward, pinning Varun with red-rimmed eyes.
No! I'm not hungry, and I'm not thirsty. I just need to know one thing. Why didn't you trust us?
Varun paused, then walked slowly to the chair facing them and sat down.
It was not you I did not trust. I always knew that your intentions were pure. Yours as well, Miss Creed. But Madame Leroy... I have sought the eyes of Sita for generations, and I could not lose one of them when it was within my grasp.
Wait. You have been seeking for generations? You mean your family, right?
I meant exactly what I said, Professor. It was I who stole the diamonds, and it is me on whom the curse was placed. I will never know peace until I have returned the diamonds to the temple.
Anya looked at Ben in alarm, wondering if she should ask Varun to fetch the doctor he had offered.
Ben? You okay?
Oh, yeah. You bet. I'm just frickin' wonderful.
Anya looked at Varun, who was, as usual, waiting calmly.
May we at least see the stone?
Yes, Miss Creed. It was never my intention to deny you and the professor your find.
The coffee table between the sofa and chair was covered with a white cloth. Another cloth concealed something underneath it. And there they were, every color of the rainbow. A ruby larger than the one they had found in Montreal, egg-sized opals, a Baroque pearl and sapphire necklace, and in the midst of a few other set stones that were smaller only by comparison, was the Eye of Sita. It was larger than any diamond had a right to be. It wasn't deep green like an emerald, but a lighter green like a field of tall grass. The cut was rough, but there was an inner fire that defied description, and caused the breath to catch in all their throats.
This is all that was left of the treasure. I'm sure that the remainder of it was sold off to finance the expedition and make the most valuable jewels easier to smuggle.
They're beautiful.
Yes. In my quest for the eyes of Sita, I have come across jewels beyond counting that were stolen from my homeland in the name of imperialism. The temples and statues they used to adorn are practically all gone now, but I have at least been able to bring them back to India.
Varun stood and picked up the flashing green diamond.
All of them together cannot match the value of this one, however. At least to me.
He carefully slipped the jewel into the inside pocket of his suit jacket and buttoned it closed.
According to my staff, the provenances of the rest of the jewels have nothing to do with India. I shall make their research available to you.
Varun smiled slightly.
As archaeologists, you will have a literal field day cataloging your wonderful finds. This is what you came for, isn't it, Professor McKittrick?
Ben stared at the beautiful objects on the white cloth for a moment.
I suppose it is what I came for. But I don't feel much like celebrating right now. No offense.
None taken. Please believe me when I say that I am saddened by the loss of Madame Leroy. Arrangements are being made to return her remains to Canada. And please accept my gratitude for the part both of you played in all of this. Now, I must be going. Feel free to stay here in this suite. It has already been paid for through the week. Notify the hotel if you wish to stay longer, and it will be covered, as well as airfare for your return to Montreal. The key cards are on the dresser.
Varun started across the room, but Anya jumped up and followed, stopping him as he reached the door.
Thank you for saving our lives. I hope you find the peace you seek. And for what it's worth, I believe you.
Thank you, Miss Creed, for saving the life of my associate. Help Ben come to terms with this experience, and I knew you would believe me.
Anya walked slowly back to the sofa, where Ben sat, rolling the enormous ruby between his palms. She sat next to him and waited. He put the gem back on the table and looked at her. His eyes were glassy with fatigue.
It's gonna be really hard to go back to reality.
I know. But you don't have to do it right now. Wanna get some fresh air? Or room service? Or both?
That sounds really good. But if I stand up, I'll probably fall down. If it's all the same to you, I just think I need to close my eyes for a minute.
Anya picked up the smaller cloth and covered the jewels.
Sure. I think the bedroom is around the corner.
Nope, right here is fine.
Okay.
Anya stood to give him room, and Ben toppled over, stretched out on the sofa, and closed his eyes. Anya watched him for a moment, then walked over to the balcony door. She crossed to the balcony rail and leaned on it. The view of the low hills surrounding the bay was breathtaking. Anya could hardly believe that just a few hours earlier, she'd been shivering in the bitter cold under gray Montreal skies.
You wouldn't believe how much more beautiful it was before this hotel sprang up along the shoreline.
Anya turned to see a familiar form standing on the next balcony.
I should have known this wasn't quite over. Hello, Rue.
How is the professor?
Sleeping off the after effects of all the adrenaline he's been pumping the last couple of days.
Pity. I would have liked to meet him.
Nope, not a good idea. He's already met one immortal today. That's more than enough.
To whom are you referring? Not Garin, I hope.
No, thank goodness. I mean Mr. Varun, the Indian gentleman who saved our bacon twice, once in Montreal and again just a short while ago. He was cursed by a Hindu goddess.
Ah, and you believe him?
Why wouldn't I? I believe you.
Well,
Anyway, I'm glad to have the opportunity to pick a few bones with you in private, old man. I have a sneaking suspicion you had a lot to do with this whole dangerous mess.
You are correct, I'm afraid.
Did you send Antoinette to find me?
I did.
And what is... was... your connection to her?
Rue looked out over the water. Whatever their connection, Anya could tell it wasn't business.
I have known her and her family for a very long time. And I always had a fondness for her.
That doesn't sound like the whole story.
Very well. I was responsible for bringing disaster upon her family. I have been waiting a long time to make it right.
Something to do with the jewels?
To some extent.
With Agnes?
I met Agnes in London a long time ago. Like her, I had gone there to take refuge from the revolution in France, and to see if I could somehow profit from the strife. I agreed to help her get the Bourbon crown jewels to the New World. Obviously, it was too dangerous for a young woman to travel that far alone, especially with her fortune in jewels in tow. So I found a bodyguard to keep her and the treasure safe. A handsome young soldier of strong moral fiber. At least, that's what I thought. But I misjudged him. They fell in love, married, started a family. But he had very little sense when it came to managing money. Eventually, he came to love drinking more than he loved his family. And though he professed his loyalty to France and the legacy of the crown, he resented his wife for protecting a treasure that would have made them both wealthy. Poor Agnes remained steadfast and was forced to hide the treasure so her sot of a husband would not drink and gamble it away. Because of my failure, I've tried to look after Agnes' descendants ever since. As for Antoinette, even though she inherited the unfortunate tendencies of Agnes' husband, I always thought of her as a daughter. Knowing that she died trying to find her grandma's treasure is a great tragedy.
For what it's worth, Antoinette told me she only wanted to know that the stories were true. And she died knowing that. I think she found peace.
I can only hope so. Well, I'll leave the two of you alone. You certainly deserve to rest after your recent ordeal. Until we meet again, as we always seem to do. Au revoir, Anya.
Two large, cushioned lounge chairs furnished the balcony. One of them was now shaded as the sun dipped behind the hotel. Anya closed her eyes and enjoyed the warm, fragrant offshore breeze. It wasn't long before she dozed off. Night had long since fallen when Anya was awakened by the opening of the balcony door.
Hey. Oh, shoot. Were you asleep? I'm sorry.
Anya sat up as Ben ventured onto the balcony.
No, that's okay. Feeling any better?
Yeah, I think so. Not great, but definitely better. Did I hear you talking to someone out here a while back, or was I dreaming?
Oh, it was just an older gentleman from the room next door. He said he was checking out in the morning.
Ben took in the view from the balcony with the lights of Fort de France twinkling around the bay.
Wow.
Then he sat down and laid back on the other lounge chair. Anya was relieved to see him smile faintly.
As my students would say, this definitely does not suck.
It certainly does not.
So, about Varun's offer.
Yes.
Any chance you want to take him up on it? Stay here and decompress a little?
Anya stood and motioned with her hand.
Scoot over.
Ben's smile widened as he obeyed her command. He raised his arm so she could snuggle in closer, then wrapped it around her shoulders.
What about your classes, Professor?
I made a few phone calls before we got on Varun's jet. About a day ago. Do you believe that? Anyway, a graduate TA is taking my classes with Diana assisting him.
A graduate student and a freshman. The nearsighted leading the blind.
Well, if you're that worried about it, we can always hop on a plane and head back to the frozen tundra.
Anya gently laid a finger across his lips.
Shh. No way, Indy. Absolutely no way.
Rogue Angel, Eyes of the Beholder, is a graphic audio production. Gold Eagle and Rogue Angel are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2018, Worldwide Library. All rights reserved. Story and production copyright 2018, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney as Anya Creed, Tim Getman as Ben McKittrick, Lily Beacon as Antoinette Leroy, James Lewis as Doug Morrell, with Tracy Oliveira, Carolyn Kashner, Peter Holdway, Zeke Alton, Richard Rowan, Laura C. Harris, Terrence Aselford, Bradley Smith, Ken Jackson, Kimberly Gilbert, Michael John Casey, Todd Schofield, and Scott McCormick. Directed by Nanette Savard. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Justin Wirtz. Adapted for graphic audio by Scott McCormick and Jillian Levine Sisson. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Lee Evans' Mistwalker series, Rhiannon Held's Silver series, and Christopher L. Bennett's Only Superhuman. Available at www.graphicaudio.net.
On your feet, Watson! The game is afoot in the wolf at our door!
Sherlock Holmes is an unparalleled genius.
Why does a detective inspector of Scotland Yard ask the help of, well, you?
I am a sort of consulting detective.
What is a consulting detective? I've never heard of such a thing.
It means that when certain individuals encounter a crime that they cannot solve, they call upon my powers of observation.
Warlock Holmes is an idiot.
And they pay you for your help?
No.
Ah, then you are credited with solving the crimes, which helps build your reputation for private practice.
No.
Then Holmes, why are we going?
The only thing he has really got going for him are the might of 1,000 demons.
Roche, Roche, justice comes upon the wicked. The finder knows. He that beheld the work beheld him that did the deed.
And his stalwart companion.
I too believe I have discovered a fact that will be pivotal to the solution of this case.
And what's that?
That my new friend John is really good at this sort of thing.
Thankfully, Dr. Watson is always there to aid him through the treacherous shoals of Victorian propriety.
I don't care about such things, Watson.
Well, you ought to, or you'll be caught.
Caught at what?
Nothing.
And save him from a gruesome death every now and again.
Oh, dear. It's even worse than I expected.
What do we do?
That all depends upon you, I think. Now, understand, Watson. That thing is looking for a human sacrifice. There's only one thing for it. Good luck!
A magical detective not afraid to get his hands dirty and possibly sacrifice a friend or two along the way. G.S. Denning's Warlock Holmes. Same as the old Holmes, only this one is a little hell-bent. Now available in graphic audio.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind on the go, anytime, anywhere. And be sure to listen to our new free graphic audio story podcast, Gasp, featuring all new serialized episodes of a complete full-length story, along with episodes that feature short stories in our graphic audio format. Once you do, we're confident you'll want to subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can subscribe to Gasp through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Coming this fall, look for Graphic Audio Streams, our new streaming subscription service. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.